How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 190 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com, check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. See all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Friday episode, I figure, man, I haven't had this guy on in like a week. It's 100, how many times you've been on now? 100, all 190 episodes? John Hamm from the franchise is here with me once again.
I've been on more times than Russ has had triple doubles. I'm just, that's my thought.
Yeah, you've been on a lot.
Thank you, by the way.
No, thank you for coming on and just talking to me, likely against your wishes, this many times.
Well, we all have to do our small part, you know, so.
I think almost 10% of my episodes include John Hamm.
Yeah. And people still subscribe and download. That's shocking.
Well, it's amazing that people haven't realized, wait a second, I can just listen to him on the radio instead of having to go through me. It's really, really the better way to do it. You know, the Thunder are down 2-0.
Yeah, so I've heard.
You heard that?
Yeah.
Got any thoughts on that?
I saw it on Twitter this morning.
Got any thoughts on that?
That I'm not terribly shocked. I mean, here's the thing is, and it's so funny because I've been getting, I mean, after game one and after game two, I've been getting panic tweets, panic DMs. I mean, people are looking to me like, who are the Thunder going to draft that's going to fix this?
Can you explain to me just the nuanced difference between a panic tweet and a panic DM?
It's the same thing, just privately or publicly. So
I feel like I've gotten a couple of panic DMs.
Yeah,
and I feel like the panic DMs are always a little bit more. They're less extreme, but more genuinely worried.
Yeah, well, there's more characters to work with, so
can add a little more.
Yeah, so you know, I keep trying to remind, like, the Thunder are the 6th seed, the Rockets are the 3 seed, the Rockets are really good. This is a very difficult matchup for Oklahoma City. This is why we talked a lot leading up to the playoffs, like, man, it might be a better matchup to play San Antonio in round one. It might be a better matchup to play Utah or the Clippers. And I had even thought at one point that Houston, you know, that they could match up fairly well with the Rockets. But, you know, give the Rockets a bunch of credit. You know, this is playoff basketball where they are just out there exposing weaknesses.
Yeah, they are. Their offense is so impressive, isn't it? Just what they're able to do on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, I don't think people realize, like, people talk about the threes that they take and all that kind of stuff, and obviously their 3-point attack is pretty amazing, but, like, this is the fourth most efficient offense in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
This is an historically good offense, just because it's not number one this year, because the Warriors is the number one offense in the last 10 years. Just because it's not number one this year doesn't mean that it is not, like, a historically good offense. It's, what is it, Golden State this year is number one, Phoenix 2010 is number two, Golden State last year is number three, and then you've got this year's Houston team. And those are the four best offensive efficiencies over the last
the last 10 years. Like, they don't just, I mean, the three-point shot is the most important thing that they do. The Thunder have actually done a very good job limiting their three-point shots. Like, they've only given up, what, 30, 31 a game, right, in the first two games? And they take 40. They take 40 a game in the regular season. So Thunder have done a good job, but this offense is so much more. Harden is, aside from really, like, a couple of, like, off-shooting quarters, overall he's been great controlling the game, controlling pace, controlling what they want to do, and you know, they're really good. They've been great running pick and rolls. Like, they've been so great running pick and rolls. Capella's been good. Their bigs are underrated with Capella and Nene. They just have a lot of offensive firepower.
Yeah, and frankly, their defense has been pretty stout, too. So
Their defense is overly criticized, in my opinion. Since Patrick Beverley came back from his injury, what was it, 10, 11 games into the season, they were 11th in points allowed per possession, which is not great. Yeah. It's not great. The Thunder are 10th. Like, it's not great, but it's above league average. And when you got a historically good offense and a defense that's above league average, you're going to be pretty damn good. Like, they have the capability of putting out strong defensive lineups. Like, they have good individual defenders. Like, Patrick Beverley is obviously a great defender. Eric Gordon is not a terrible defender. James Harden had, like, maybe his best defensive season ever this year. He was, like, not great defensively by any means, but he was he was fine defensively. I mean, he was fine. I mean, Capella is getting better. He's 22 years old and he's got a lot of defensive potential. And he makes some really nice plays around the rim, and I think he will be a very good defender, but he's getting better. Nene is, like, a great scouting report defender. He understands everybody's weakness. He obviously knows the scouting report on everybody. He's obviously a big film watcher. You don't even need to – you can just watch him play, and you know that because you see every time he shades guys right the right way. He shades guys left the right way. He knows when to contest, when not to contest. He knows how to push guys into spots where they're the least comfortable on the floor, and that's true for – like, that's not, like, this series. That's just – with the way he's always been, and he's a good pick-and-roll defender on top of that. Like, they have – Trevor Ariza, obviously, is a really good perimeter defender. They have the capability of putting out really good defensive lineups while still maintaining offense with this team, and those lineups can be scary. I mean, it's a really good team.
Yeah. And so let's go ahead and address – and I haven't had a chance to listen to your podcast last night, so, you know, pardon me if you've covered this, but – because I've heard so many angles on Russell Westbrook late in the game yesterday. So, and I've been asked about it for my take on it. The one thing that I mentioned this morning is I didn't see the entire press conference, but I saw Russell Westbrook get up to the podium and say that he needs to do a better job of trusting his teammates. And the question that I would like, that I know I wouldn't get the answer to, but I would like to hear asked, is why don't you trust your teammates? I would just like to know, why do you constantly have to get up in front of the media and say, I got to trust my teammates more?
Yeah, that's, I didn't think about asking that, but that's a great point.
I mean, I don't expect maybe to go into great detail about it.
Maybe somebody who works for the franchise 107.7 and will be covering the game tomorrow should ask the question.
Yeah, I'll send Eric. And I'll have him just cut off. Maybe Jerry.
No,
depends
that's a
on
great point. I honestly, I guess it sounds so obvious when you say it, but I didn't think about that. That's a great follow-up question.
And I understand, you know, we've talked about being in that environment, you know, sometimes you don't get a chance to ask that question or for whatever reason, maybe that question doesn't come up, but it's the first thing that I thought of is I've heard this before. I've heard Russ talk about, well, down the stretch, I got to trust my teammates. Well, then why don't you? So, and not that I would expect him to give an honest, you know, well, Victor Oladipo was having a rough shooting night, or look, many times this season, I brought us back down from 15 points. I don't expect him to really go into a lot of depth, but I mean, just to at least put it out there. I just think it'd be kind of interesting to see the response. It might be a death stare.
Might be a death stare. Decent chances a death stare.
Yeah.
Decent chance you're not coming out of there alive, but that would be a good question. You got to save that for it. You got to save that for the appropriate time.
Yeah, yeah, no
that's
doubt.
Like I think some people think like the important thing is to ask the aggressive question. I think a lot of people think that, And it's okay that people think that because, like, most people, like, didn't go to journalism school. Like, that's right. that's fine. Like, it's okay for someone to think that. But the important thing is not to ask the aggressive question. The important thing is to get the answer that people want to know. And
right.
If you ask the aggressive question in a bad time and you get the deaths there, then you get memed, but you don't get the answer that people want to know, and now that question's off the table. You can't ask it again.
Right.
Because if he's not answering it the first time, you can't ask it again. You're going to get, like, it's somewhere between an unwritten rule of not trying to kind of put a guy in a bad position, and, you know, obviously he's not going to appreciate it at all. And it's not going to be like the death's there, which is comical, and he gets over it. It's going to be him legitimately, you know, you're going to be pissing off somebody you cover. And genuinely and wrongfully so, like, you would be in the wrong if you did that. So you have to pick your spots with a lot of this kind of stuff. And some people you have to pick it more, you know, discriminately. You know, some people you have to pick it more particularly than others. Like, Billy Donovan, I can just come in, I can just ask him a tough question and, like, whatever. He's just so easy, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, with Russ, you got to pick your spots. So pick your spot, John Hamm. Pick your spot, John Hamm.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I feel like you can kind of frame it as, you know, Russ, you mentioned this the other night. You need to learn to trust your teammates more. If I went back, I could probably find another time or two that he said something similar. And, you know, I think there might be a way to ask it. But again, I don't really expect to get an enlightening response out of it. But
there are definitely ways to ask it. I'm not talking about ways that there are ways to ask anything. Anything you want to know the answer to, as long as it's, like, not offensive and an appropriate an appropriate notion. You're not, like, invading on somebody's you know personal space or, you know, real like privacy or anything like that. Then I mean, there's a way to ask anything. Our job is to ask tough stuff. It's just about maximizing your chances of getting a real answer.
Right.
You want to put yourself in a circumstance that you have a real answer, because that's the most important thing. It's not asking the question; it's getting the answer.
Right. Yeah. You're right.
What did you think of his fourth quarter? 18 shots in the fourth, 4 for 18 in the fourth quarter. He had a 66% usage rate in the fourth. What did you think of that?
I went and looked that up earlier today. You know, a lot of times you and I have talked about, you know, obviously it looks a lot better when the shots go in. And there have been times during the regular season where Russ has taken bad shots down the stretch in clutch situations and they've gone in. I mean, I can think of a few times this season where a not so great shot has gone in for him. And so that's part of it. He put up shots that I thought were not good shots and they didn't go in. And then people are pointing out, you know, and these are always difficult when people freeze frame a play and say, look at this guy that was wide open. I mean, it usually looks a little bit different in real time, but the point is, like, there wasn't even an attempt to run anything except for Russell Westbrook barrel to the basket. And he's done that during the season, but usually when they're down 14 or 15, that wasn't the situation in this game. But then here's the other caveat I'm going to throw out there. Is that I don't think Russell Westbrook this season played clutch minutes after playing the entire fourth quarter.
No, that's true. You are correct.
So, and I you know, tweeted out last night, a, you know, competent backup point guard would have been really handy. Because if just buy Russ a few more minutes, James Harden came back in with 6 or 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, you know, basically well rested, well tanned, got a nice vacation, came back in fresh as a daisy. Russ had to play that entire fourth quarter, which he normally doesn't do. So, I mean, I think that had an impact, but it might have also been another indication of, you know, we need to surrender the ball a little bit. We need to actually try to run something here rather than try to do this single-handedly.
That, I think that's a solid point. I also think if you're going to make that point, though, it's worth acknowledging. They had a lead when he came into the game in the fourth quarter. They were up 3 heading into the fourth. And they actually expanded it, I forget to what, either to 6 or to 8. They expanded it at the very beginning of the fourth. They expanded to 6 or 8. And for the first 5 or so minutes of the quarter, it was Russ on the floor with Harden on the bench. And the Thunder gave up that lead with Russ on the floor and Harden on the bench. And that, to me, is kind of where they lost it.
Yeah.
Because they, when Russ is on the floor and Harden is not, the Thunder have to outscore them. They have to outscore them in all those moments. And that to me is kind of where they lost it. Now, that's not just on Russ. I don't want to make it seem like that's just on Russ. It absolutely isn't. I mean, Billy Donovan was playing some weird lineups. Like, he's in the fourth quarter of tight games very often gone to all defense lineups around Westbrook. It's part of why the clutch numbers from Westbrook are amazing. But the reason that the Thunder were second in net rating during clutch time during the regular season was not just because of Russell Westbrook. They were the second best defense in the NBA during clutch time. And part of that was because Billy Donovan's clutch time strategy was basically, okay, I don't even care about offense because Russ is going to take every shot anyway. So I'm just putting in all defensive personnel during clutch time. And that's something he's tried to do, except the non-offensive personnel that he was putting in the fourth quarter next to Westbrook was like, Kyle Singler, he was playing Kyle Singler and Jeremy Grant and Sabonis, and there just weren't offensive weapons. And he put in, Kanter for like a brief moment. I thought Kanter was going to start the quarter with Harden on the bench, and he didn't. And he put in Kanter for a brief moment and kind of admitted after the game that he thought maybe he could have gotten Kanter some more minutes in the second half. And I assumed he meant those first few minutes of the fourth quarter when he didn't play while Harden was out. But you know, that's the kind of stuff where, like, the lineups can hurt you. The lineups can hurt you. The lineup choices can hurt you. And I think from that point on, Russ just kept shooting. Like, he just – I think once he gets into a mode of, all right, I have to shoot every single time, I think it's hard for him to turn off that mode once he turns it on. And he turned it on at the beginning of the quarter because with that lineup, like, he just he feels like he has to do it. I don't know if he has to do it to the degree that he did it. But he obviously has to shoot more, and he has to create more when he's out there with a lineup like that. And he's never turned it off, even when he could have turned it off.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's unfortunate because that's a game the Thunder legitimately could have stolen Houston. It doesn't mean the series is over. It could be a sweep. I don't think it's going to be. But, I mean, this series comes back to Oklahoma City for two games. And I think that matters. And I think some, you know, significant changes were made that in game two that are going to carry over, and, you know, Donovan's probably going to continue to tinker with things, in terms of, like you say, when can I get Kanter and McDermott out there so they're not pick and rolled to death? And how can he use those guys in those situations? So, I mean, I think there's some things to me. I just want to see, you know, as long as the Thunder are competing at a high level in this series, that's what I mostly care about.
Yeah, that seems to make sense. How do you think they win game three? Like, if I told you they had to do two things, but, you know, let's make it like a nice three keys of the game. If I told you that they need to do three things better in game three in order to win that game, what would you say they are? You can be as generic or as specific as you like.
Okay. Shoot better. And I'm referring to three-point shooting, mostly. They were 7 of 30 last game. I forget what they were in game one. Maybe that will be more comfortable at home. So I'll say that. I'll say play Taj Gibson more than 21 minutes.
That's weird, right? The Gibson minutes are weird, aren't they?
Very weird. Very weird. And I'll say shorten the rotation. And I kind of understand. I mean, I was asked this morning, like, you know, why is Donovan still experimenting in the playoffs? I don't think he's experimenting. I think he's gotten a good look at these guys all season, and he is genuinely, I think, trying to play matchups and doing it that way. But yeah, I think maybe it's time to trim a guy or two and put those minutes in better places, like in Taj Gibson.
People forget this is not unexpected. Billy Donovan played Kyle Singler in the first couple of games against the Spurs last year too.
Yep.
This is what Billy Donovan does. It's very easy to critique, and it's something that I've done in the last 24 hours too. It's very easy to critique the lineup choices. I just did it 5 minutes ago. It's very easy to critique the lineup choices when he's playing, you know, going 12 men deep in a playoff game when he was going 11 or 10 men deep during the regular season. and he's playing guys who didn't show any production, who you didn't think going into it were going to show production. But it's the exact same strategy that led him to the lineups that he never would have gotten to had he not employed this sort of mentality and strategy in the Spurs series. You know, I talk about it all the time. Billy Donovan's greatest strength is also his greatest weakness as a coach. And last night we saw the weakness with his just like rage against, it's his rage against stubbornness and like the extreme flexibility he has in wanting to try out different lineups and try out different matchups and adjusting to what the other team is doing just immediately in terms of putting out guys who he thinks are going to match up better. And it worked against San Antonio last year. He found that Adams Kanter lineup. It worked against Golden State last year when he found the small lineup that dominated in games 3 and 4. And he doesn't get there if he doesn't have this too. So maybe in game 3, he finds that lineup and everyone's like, oh, okay. And we forget about what happened in game 2, you know, because that's part of the process in getting to there. And getting there because he kind of has, he's seen how some of this stuff works now. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he never finds it. But I think we can critique stuff by saying, okay, well, this individually didn't work. This individually did work. But I do think you have to consider the overall philosophy too and say, well, if you like what he did in last year's playoffs in two huge series against a 67-win team and a 73-win team, he's doing the same thing now. Whether it works or not, you either need to reconsider what you thought about what he did in last year's playoffs, or you need to reconsider what you think about how he's doing it this year. Now, I think you can disagree with the individual. Like, you can disagree on a micro level while understanding on a macro level. And that's kind of what I'm getting at now. Like, I agree with the people who are like, why, you know, with Singler getting 10 minutes last night, like, and wondering why that happened. Like, I understand that. That makes sense to me. And I agree with that on the micro level, but I also think we need to understand what's going on the macro level as well.
And I understand that defending Kyle Singler is kind of like defending North Korea at this point. People have already...
That is harsh.
Well, I'm just saying, I am putting myself out on a limb here by defending Kyle Singler a little bit. He actually played pretty well in those last three regular season games. Now,
yeah, he did. He was good in the Denver game.
That they were, you know, basically meaningless kind of throwaway games. I get that. Not quite the competition level of, you know, the Houston Rockets, but still, like, you know, he wasn't just put back in the lineup after 20 consecutive DNPs. I mean, he was out of the lineup for a while, but he actually did show in those last three games that he was actually doing some nice things. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just all part of Billy's process to try to compile as much. It's not data because it's not a numbers thing because the sample is too small, but just compile as much evidence as he possibly can to look at stuff and look at different lineups and look at what works against very specific opponents. He always talks about how he just can't get well and he can't get an accurate enough sample from the regular season matchups because Ryan Anderson didn't play in one game and you know, Taj Gibson wasn't in the other three and McDermott wasn't in the other three, and Lou Williams wasn't in the other three, and you know, he talks about how it's hard to you know, figure it out just from those regular season games, and you can get some idea, but he's still figuring it out. And if you just disagree with that overall, and you think that he maybe you know got fortunate in last year's playoffs finding it, and you think that's too high risk of a strategy with what he's doing because you're throwing away games in order to find something by game 3 or 4. Maybe it works when you have a team as great as one with KD and Russ, but it doesn't work when you're a 6 seed. That's cool. I think that's smart. That's a smart take and that's fine. But I just also think you just need to think of it on a greater level, like playing Kyle Singler or playing Domantas Sabonis or playing Samaje Christen is not an individual move for Billy Donovan. It's part of his like greater basketball philosophy, and that just needs to be recognized when you're having this conversation.
Yeah, that's pretty deep stuff. And I mean, let's be honest. Even if
as deep as the Thunder bench,
even if Billy D had trimmed it down to an 8-man rotation, I mean, would this team be coming back, you know, anything better than 0-2? I don't know. I mean, I feel like Houston played that well in those first two games at home. So I don't know, but I understand fans a lot of times just need something to rail at.
Everyone needs something to rail at.
This is true.
Everybody. What else we got? What I have no outline, John.
Yeah.
I have nothing outlined. Do we have anything? Are we done? What do you think is going to happen in the two home games?
I think they're going to win at least one.
Me too.
I mean, I picked the Rockets in six to win this series. Therefore, you know, it stands to reason I would expect the Thunder to win a couple of games. And obviously, if it's, you know, Rockets in six, that means the Thunder cannot win game six. Therefore, I feel like they're going to win at least one of these two. I think getting back at Chesapeake, that whole thing about role play, the old adage of role players play better at home, maybe that comes into play. Maybe the the Rockets role players don't play quite as well, but I think they'll get at least a split.
Me too. I honestly wouldn't be shocked if they won both of them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked. You want to hear my comparison of the day?
Let's hear it.
So here's something that I wrote about today. I threw a little note in the paper. Let me call this out to make sure I get the numbers right. So, you know when Billy Donovan got asked a million times this year about, like, just throughout the year, is what Russell Westbrook is doing, is that sustainable for your offense? Everyone would ask about sustainable. Is it sustainable for your offense, what he's doing? And do you remember, like, what his answer was for it? Like, do you remember the bullet points of his answer every time? He'd give the same answer every time.
I don't remember right offhand.
So he would say that, yeah, it is sustainable. He would talk about his minutes, and he would say, well, look, he's only playing 34, 35, 36 minutes. And he'd say, yeah, I do think it's sustainable. You look at him, he's got so much energy, blah, blah. And then he would say the one time where he thought what he did wasn't sustainable. And do you remember his one example of what wasn't sustainable every single time?
What's that?
He said the Phoenix game from earlier this year. He would always reference back the Phoenix game. When Westbrook had that 51-point triple-double where they won in overtime, and he took a million shots.
Game number two of the season.
Yes, game number two of the season. He'd say that, I would say, wasn't really sustainable. It's like here's one of the quotes. If we've got to have him shoot 40, 44 times to be successful, I don't think that's going to work over the long haul. I think Russell knows that. He's even made some comments about that. Now, here was Russell Westbrook's line from the Phoenix game. 51-13-10. Here was his line from game two. 51-13-10. Here was his shooting line from Phoenix. 17-44. Here was his shooting line from game two. 17-43. Here was his three-point shooting from Phoenix. 2-10. Here was a three-point shooting from game two. 2-11. I mean, look, you got to take context into the equation, obviously. Different teams, different situation. It's the playoffs versus the regular season. You know, all of these things you absolutely have to take into context. But the numbers are, like, jarringly similar, and that's the game that Billy Donovan pointed out as not a sustainable offensive performance, not for Russell Westbrook, not for in terms of his energy, but in terms of, like, the team being able to run good offense. And during a playoff series, teams locked down. This is – game three is the adjustment game during a seven-game series. Like, that's a game where it's like, all right, everyone knows what everyone's doing now. You got two games under load. Now everyone knows what everyone's doing. And if you just do the same thing every single time, if you run the same thing every time, the other team's going to sniff it out because now they know. The players know, the coaches know, everybody knows. And if that was the time where the offense wasn't sustainable, and look, if you go back, I watched some of that Phoenix game today because I don't have much of a life. And I wanted to see how similar they were. And I knew this because I actually keep mentioning it, but I had forgotten he took 16 mid-range shots in that Phoenix game. And he took a ton of mid-range shots in this game. And a lot of it was because they were zoning up the pick and roll with Phoenix, just like they're zoning up the pick and roll with Houston. And they're goading him into those mid-range shots. And it was late in the game, and it was a close game, and he had to try to win it in the fourth quarter. And he took a ton of shots in the fourth quarter and a ton of shots in overtime in that game. And it was incredibly similar seeing him down the stretch in that game as it was to seeing him in Houston. And I can't help but think, like, Billy Donovan and Russell Westbrook had a talk after this game. They had to. Mm-hmm. I don't know that for sure. Like, I have not heard that, and that is not a thing that will ever be released. But there were a couple of games this year where Westbrook took a bunch of shots, and there were conversations, not like strict talking to's or anything like that. Just like strategic conversations of, all right, Russ, you know, this is not something that necessarily is in the best interest of the team. How do we figure out a way to make this work better so that the offense can run smoother? And Russ, to his credit, from everything that I've heard, has been completely and totally open to those conversations, and on at least one occasion actually initiated that conversation with Billy Donovan. He's more self-aware. He is more self-aware than people think he is. I think Russell Westbrook, the person, is far more self-aware than Russell Westbrook, the player, if that makes sense. He's a lot more self-reflective after games than I ever would have thought before I started covering him based on the way that he plays. And I don't think he's going to play like he did in game two when he comes out in game three or game four. Maybe he does it again later because sometimes he just forgets and then he just unleashes himself on another team. And when he's making shots, it looks great. But I don't think stylistically he's going to play the same way. I think he's going to have a similar moment to what he's had, you know, like basically after the Portland game this year when he put up 39 shots. And after that, he just had that major assist streak. Remember that?
Yep.
Like he had like six assists in the first quarter against San Antonio and just had a huge assist streak against like Brooklyn and Toronto and was just, you know, averaged like 14 or 15 assists a game for like six straight games. And I don't know if it's going to be that extreme because it's the playoffs and you know, stuff is different in the playoffs, obviously. But I think he's going to have a similar type of change in terms of just stylistically. He's not going to be exactly the same. The team, I think we can all agree, the team is better when Russell Westbrook is passing first, when he's going at the rim aggressively, and when he's looking to facilitate. Because he's a great passer when he's willing to do it. He's a great passer. So that's my prediction for what we're going to see this weekend. And maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe I'm just like searching for comps, but that it makes sense to me.
Well, everything you mentioned about, you know, Russell Westbrook like accepting coaching and initiating that goes totally against the narrative. So I'm discarding it. I'm dismissing it. So that can't possibly be true because Russell Westbrook is uncoachable. I've seen it on Twitter.
It's true. It's true. I read it from at Twitter troll.
Yes.
What else we got? This is. I should have been more prepared for you. I'm too comfortable with you.
No, it's that's about it. I mean,
we kind of glossed over Taj Gibson. No, yeah. Gibson's weird. You think there should be more McDermott and or Abrines? I mean, 4 minutes for Abrines, 14 for McDermott. McDermott was like he doesn't defend and he gets lost off the ball. But I didn't think he was horrific defensively in that last game. And he was knocking down threes. I mean, do you think there should be more McDermott or more Abrines?
Needs to be more of one of them at least. And it looks like, I don't know, at least in game two, you know, Billy kind of put more faith in Doug, and I'm fine with that. Especially, I mean, using him as like as a small ball four in some of those lineups. Another thing that might be kind of important, try to keep Steven Adams out of foul trouble.
Yeah, I mean, that's just huge. Adams being in foul trouble was such a big deal. He played 27 minutes. He would have played 10 more if he were in foul trouble.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of a big deal, too. So, in other words, look, there are some things that to where the Thunder could still win a game or two in this series. If, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibilities that they upset the Rockets. That's awfully hard to win four out of the last five games in the series, but it can be done. But if the expected result comes and they're eliminated in the first round, again, I just want to see this team being competitive and playing at a high level when the season's over. So,
yeah. Also, shout out to Andre Robertson, who guarded James Harden for an entire game yesterday. Did a really good job and had one personal foul.
Yeah, and in addition to 8 rebounds and 12 points. So that dude is going to be swimming in some money this summer.
He's going to make a lot.
He should.
He's making at least $12 million a year.
He has been the Thunder's second best player in this series so far.
Yeah, no, he has. He's been great. He's been moving off the ball. They've been using him a lot more ball screens. Game two, he was setting a lot of ball screens. He was looking like Western Conference Finals Andre Robertson. It's funny. Yeah. Like, playoff Robertson's kind of a thing.
Yeah, kind of.
It's funny.
He and playoff Rondo on the same team.
And then you can get playoff Whitman to coach it.
Flipping the the dry erase board over and over and over and over. You remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
What was that? He was like, it was in a timeout. Randy Whitman was going to draw.
Of course. He kept trying to. And he kept spinning it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That was so funny. That was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was hilarious. But yeah, playoff Whitman. Playoff Whitman would, like, you know, play big all season. Now all of a sudden, Paul Pierce, small ball four in the postseason. Be like, wait, what's going on? You haven't played Paul Pierce all year at the four.
Yeah. And it worked.
You got anything to plug?
Nothing to plug.
Nothing.
Nothing of significance to plug.
You're worthless. You have nothing.
I am plugless.
And you're John M. Hamm, John without an
H. That's right. That's
on Twitter.
On Twitter.
And you can remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. Head out to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at FredKatz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. I am not going to be back until Sunday night, so I won't be doing post-game after game three. It's the normal schedule, Monday through Friday. But just wanted to point out that I'm not doing anything special just because it's the playoffs. There will not be a show Saturday morning after game three. I'll be back Monday morning. I'll be podcasting after game four, no matter the results. I'm sure most of my listeners are hoping that's not an end of season podcast and is just a going back to Houston with the series tied at two podcast. But I'll be podcasting late on Sunday night. And, you know, that'll be up at, you know, whenever I normally post it, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, depending on what time I get it done. John, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, as always.
And until Sunday, Locked On Thunder, or until Monday. Until Monday? What day is it? Do I podcast on Sundays? I just forgot how weeks work, John.
Yeah, it's been a long season.
I could edit this out, but I'm not ashamed of my lack of intelligence, so it's okay. Until Monday. Locked On Thunder's locking up.